to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the AWARE Show. This is Lisa Garr. So on rare occasions, there's a movie that you'll see that will really move you, that will change you, that will transform you, that will make you think and live your life differently. And I see a lot of great films here, and I see a lot of the documentaries, the infotainment movies, the ones that inform you and also do it embedded in a story. But this movie that I saw called People Versus the State of Illusion actually got me to tears. It did, because it took an example of such a normal person who was hardworking, who had a bad mistake happen basically to him, and he lost his greatest love in his life, which was his little girl. And he lost her by having to go to prison. And what he went through, and the story and the way that it unfolds, shows that it really all started with the confines of his mind, with the thoughts that were happening, like Ram Dass said yesterday, or Jim Driever, between your ears. So much happens with our thoughts that we really create that we never know that we're creating. And to explain this to someone who's in the thick of it, who's in the middle of it, is like, you know, nails grinding on a chalkboard. They don't want to hear it. They can't hear it. They can never possibly understand that they created their own reality. Until then, you see a movie that unfolds it in a story. And that's what this movie is, The People Versus the State of Illusion. And joining me is filmmaker Austin Vickers. And he is a visionary. And I appreciate you being here with me in studio. Thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And the film actually is debuting this weekend?
It is. It opens Friday at the Landmark Regent Theater in Westwood.
In Westwood. So you guys will have an opportunity to see it. And as it's been opening across the country, have you been receiving a lot of great feedback? Oh, you're doing a Q&A at the end of the movie, right?
I am, yeah. After the 7:30 showings on both Friday and Saturday night, I'm going to be there, as well as the director, Scott Servine.
So. Doing a Q&A. So the movie really makes you think about, well, first of all, if you could, I gave a synopsis, but it's so much more than that. It's got a lot of layers to it. Tell us a little bit about the film.
Well, it's really a film that's designed to, I think, illuminate a little bit more for people about the mechanics of perception and, you know, what we're actually capable of perceiving and how that really translates into the view of the world that we have, and also the power of our imagination. I think one of the things when I did the research for this film and having studied the subjects for a long time is I think people generally, we hugely underestimate the power of our imagination, both from what we're actually imagining that we don't think we're imagining, as well as what we're capable of imagining and turning into reality. And so the film kind of really goes into those subjects through the metaphor of the story pretty deeply.
You get so many, I think each person that watches it will get something different out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, especially you as a filmmaker. But the part about, you know, the part about the loss of the child, of course, got me because I'm a mama, but the idea that you can do something so stupid out of stress and put your entire life in jeopardy. And this particular guy had a, you know, glass of wine before he went to see his daughter's play performance, afterwards gets in the car, like well after, and hits someone and actually kills that person. He winds up in prison, and his daughter wound up in the system, in the foster care system. And to see what he went through through the, and you use the analogy of the, of jail as a metaphor for the mind that was so strong. And it really does show that there are so many decisions that we make along the way that lead up to what we think is the accident, what we think happened to us, that we're the victim. And when you look back, there's so many sequence of events that happen along the way. So you have been teaching this for a long time. You've been teaching about awareness, one of the main things. Tell us a little bit about your background, your story.
Well, I actually, it's funny because people a lot of times will ask me, you know, how did you go from being a lawyer to making this film? And I often like to tell people, you know, the more interesting story is how I became a lawyer in the first place, I think.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Only because I grew up in Canada and my parents were pioneers in the alternative health field. So my parents actually opened one of the very first holistic therapy centers up in Canada in the early 1970s and were practicing things like iridology and color therapy and herbology. And when I tell people today, they're always like, oh, that's so cool. But back in the early 70s, especially as the son of these people, it wasn't so cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you went the opposite. Those were my woo-woo parents, and I don't want to be identified with them.
Yeah. No, they would, you know, send me to school with homemade deodorants and, you know, they put me in ventriloquism lessons as a kid. I mean, my experience as a child was so offbeat compared to almost everybody that I knew. And if I would have said to my parents in high school, listen, I'm going to go over to my girlfriend's house and we're going to have sex all night and smoke pot and stuff, that would have been perfectly acceptable. So the only way I could really get back at them was to become a lawyer. And of course, that's what I did. That's my childhood form of rebellion. So
you went to the books.
Yes.
You went to the system,
yes.
The very thing that they revolted against.
I will kill them with analytical thinking.
But then what happened?
Well, of course, you know, there's a T.S. Eliot quote, which I love, which says, the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started from and know that place for the first time. And during the course of being a lawyer and making many compromises myself and living very unimaginatively and unauthentically, I, through a many series of my own compromises, arrived at that same point where I woke up one day and found myself trapped in a prison that was of my own creation, that left me not passionate about life and not inspired about life. And I literally felt like I was dying inside, and I didn't want to die in that way. So decided to embark on change.
So you started now, of course, you started writing about it, speaking about it. And then where did the film come in all of this?
Well, I actually, about 12 years ago, I'd finished writing my book. I was still practicing law in London at the time. And I had opportunity to speak at a very large mind-body-spirit conference over there. And the experience was just so personally overwhelming for me that I literally came back. I'd taken a week's vacation to deliver the speech and came back from that vacation and quit my job and just decided, you know, this is what I want to do full time, and moved back to the United States and then have been doing this work for about 12 years. And about 4 years ago, had the opportunity to speak for PBS in their education of teachers in the state of Arizona. And I talked to them generally about the idea, and they were intrigued about the idea for the show and basically said, if you make it, you know, we would be very interested in it if it's good quality. So that was all I needed. And I went off to make it.
Well, you really are the type of person that is you've got a lot of will. Would you say that to be true?
It's also called stubbornness by, you know, people like my ex-wife. And, yeah.
Don't mention that word. It's called will.
Yes,
honey, it's
will.
Called passion.
I have a lot of passion and a lot of will, definitely.
Ability to make things happen. I mean, you serve as an example for people who are in those types of jobs, who do have a different calling, that would like to be able to make a difference and to step out beyond that rut that they may be in, that they think is convenient, especially with the downturned economy and all of that conversation going on. You really pursued your passion. We actually have a trailer of the movie, so you can hear it here. This just gives you kind of an overview of what the movie is about. It's called The People Versus the State of Illusion. Also, this film is available for film club members. So if you call the front desk for tickets, if you're a film club member, you can also go through that way too. But check this out.
My My name is Austin Vickers, and I'm an attorney involved in what may be the most important trial you will ever witness. And it is literally a matter of life and death. One in every 15 American children will go to jail in their lifetime. Over half of all marriages will end in divorce. Over 50% of deaths in the United States can be attributed to behavioral or social factors, the majority of which are rooted in stress. More people will die from suicide each year than from all of the world's armed conflicts combined.
We have all kinds of different stress: traffic jams, internet connections, second mortgages, single parenting, and all of those reactions to the environment produce the same physiological response.
People are so focused on the content of their perceptions that they are unaware of how those perceptions are formed and how those patterns are actually helping to create the problems in life that appear to be happening to them.
At a subtle level, one of the things that I think most creates these prison walls is what you might call our deepest habits of thought.
I think this film is important because it brings to light the reality of our illusion.
This film is important if you want to experience more love, more freedom, reconnect with who you were meant to be in this lifetime.
It's often said that people are afraid of dying. I think they're more afraid of living.
Once people realize that the prison walls are imaginary, that they're a figment of their own mind, then the escape is easy.
Very dramatic ending there. The movie really does hit home in very many places. There's a couple of thoughts that I wanted to touch on there, Austin. And Austin Vickers is with me, the filmmaker. And again, the movie screens plays this week in Westwood at the
Landmark Regent Theater.
Yep. Okay. So you mentioned that the habits become addictions that we then have to break, like they are chains. In what way did this apply to your life?
Well, like anybody, I think that for much of my life, I just operated unconsciously. I never really stopped to consider that my view of the world was simply, you know, one extremely limited view of the total amount of information that's available. I mean, one of the scientific facts we present in the film is that our view of reality is closer to zero as a percentage than 1/1000th of 1% of the information that's available to us. So we can't possibly see reality in an objective way. We see reality in an extremely biased and prejudiced way that's dictated by the habits of our thinking and the habits of our mind. And when we start to realize that, when I started to realize that, what that does is it opens up the possibility for different interpretations. And when you start to play in that place of different interpretations and different perceptions that become more conscious, then the reactions of the world and people and events and circumstances to your perception changes also. And that's, I think, when life really becomes magical, because we realize that we're really much bigger players in the game of this experience than we may have thought.
I've heard that in so many different contexts. When you look at the way you see the world will change, you know, around you. And that is so true. But then think about it. If you were to open your mind to all of these different thoughts and philosophies and teachings, you would get so lost, though.
Well, for sure, especially in our culture and
yes,
in this day and age.
There's so much.
Yeah, overwhelmed by information. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the guiding, guidance mechanisms that I love was a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson, who's one of my favorite writers of all time. And he was asked the question, how do we know the path of our soul? And he answered the question by saying, follow the people, places, and things that you are most attracted to. And he explained it as, you know, the difference in our attractions, why somebody wants to live in the ocean and another person loves the mountains, or why we're attracted to this one person versus another person. Our attractions literally is the soul's way of seeking a path. And if we follow our attractions, I really believe that they will guide us in a way that does allow that soul to kind of unveil itself.
True. That's true. And then you'll know what it's right when it hits you, when it truly does hit you. The other thing that you say in the movie there, that we are, what do you say, that this movie is really about you, and that we have our own chains that hold us back. And as I was watching the film, I found different parts of the film that completely related to me, that really did change my decisions and the things that I've done since then. Is this movie in any way autobiographical for you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I see myself in the parts. I mean, not specifically in terms of the events that transpired, but, you know, there are different roles and the characters in the film, and I see myself in all of them.
As an ex-attorney, though, did you see people that were stuck in the system that got there by, not accident, but by...
Unconsciousness?
Yeah,
unconscious. Yeah, definitely. And most importantly, myself. You know, you teach what you need to learn.
Of course. Hallelujah.
So everything that's really presented in the film are the concepts that I've really struggled with the most. But I think, you know, that's what makes us good teachers, when we really not only can live the beautiful aspects of those values and principles, but we've kind of lived the dark shadow side of it as well. I think we develop a deeper and a fuller range of insights into those values, and it makes us more effective ultimately in our teaching.
So what'd you learn?
Well, I mean, I've learned, you know, and I still am learning, I think, the power of my own imagination and what's really possible and how often I underestimate it, because I don't see, you know, so often in my past, I've always felt like I had to see everything that I would set up to make, you know, something happen in the world. And now I don't even worry about, I think, the worrying about the how of it, as long as I'm clear about my vision, the adventure and the fun in life is watching it unfold in ways that I never imagined, and seeing that, you know, life conspire with us to bring that imagination into reality. And I feel like a 3 or 4 year old in that process, but, you know, who's just starting to walk and kind of stumbling, but it's so fascinating.
It's interesting that you say that, because I just picked that up from another person I'm interviewing, who's a CEO, who basically talks about the same thing, is that the higher level that you go in your life and the more experience you get, you realize you let the things that seem like catastrophic problems roll off you easier and easier and easier with experience.
Oh, definitely.
You do too?
Yeah.
And that this place you've got now gets you back. As you let these major events roll off you, what you wind up with is play.
Absolutely. There's a Sanskrit word that I absolutely love, which is called lila, which is a part of yoga philosophy. And the idea is, if everything is illusionary, if there really is no absolute reality, and we are creators of that, our stories, so to speak, then make your story fun. It's a divine play. Lila literally means the divine play. And so it's this idea that we can create the world in our worlds in a way that inspires us and brings us so much joy and passion. And that is a playground for me that I am thoroughly enjoying.
You really are at this point in your life enjoying that. You do. You look like you look like you're like giddy about it.
I am. Yeah, I'm definitely giddy. It's a lot of fun.
But I also noticed that you look like a little bit guilty. Like, should I really be having this much fun doing this?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I grew up in that kind of Protestant work ethic, you know, where it's like life has to be difficult and a challenge in order to be doing the right thing. And I have to constantly pinch myself that you can literally play and have fun and love what you are doing and still accomplish an amazing amount of and have an impact on people's lives.
You're not a very old person. How long did it take you to get to this experience here, this euphoric view of life? Not that long.
It's taken me a while. I've definitely been working at this for a long, long time. Yeah.
Well, you have a new book out that's called Stepping Up to a Life of Vision, Passion, and Authentic Power. So you've got the book and the movie coming out, and they've kind of the same through line throughout the book. I read a little bit about the beginning, about an experience that took you back to Chile,
mm-hmm.
right? And there you wrote something saying that you don't have to go to faraway places to realize to realize that what you're looking for is just right inside within, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I grew up in Canada, and I went down to Chile a long time ago. And of course, the people there have nothing. And, you know, I spent so much time with people who literally, you know, there would be a family of 12 or 15 people inside of a house that barely had a roof on it. And I started to see very early in life the correlation between people having absolutely nothing but being at the highest levels of happiness and contentment. And, you know, which is a very different experience than sometimes a lot of youth have, who believe that we have to have, you know, more and more things to be happy or have the right relationships to be happy, et cetera. And so I was blessed early on in life to really see that that's really not true. And in fact, sometimes I think having a lot of material wealth can be even a hindrance to, mm-hmm. to happiness.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more responsibility. Does this change the way that you have parented?
Well, I like to think so. I mean, my kids tease me, though. I'm a little bit like that dad probably in Little Miss Sunshine who's always giving like the 7-step process to his kids for, you know, some sort of change or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, there's that adage, you're never a king in your own castle. But I see it in the embodiment of who my children are. I mean, they're the two of the most amazing individuals I know in my life. And I'm so proud of them and love them so much. And so I hope that between their mother and I, we've done something right.
Well, they always wind up being your teachers, don't they?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Much more conscious than I ever was, certainly at their age and even beyond.
We hope.
Yes.
I mean, right? That's
yes.
that's the goal, right? So, so basically, what you have shown and what I've gotten out of both your book and the movie is that you don't have to reach far outside of yourself to find happiness, that it really is. You don't have to go to outside lands or to prison even to, I mean, it winds up that the man in the movie in prison winds up being a bit of a prophet in prison and teaching the other inmates how to change their thinking.
Yeah, and we specifically kind of show there's a lot of dialogues that take place in the beginning when he's in prison around his surroundings and he's calling the place hell, etc. And yet without any change whatsoever in his external environment, by the end of the movie and by the end of his change, we start to see his deeper insights even into the environment around him and how beautiful he thinks and finds that it is. And that is certainly, I think, something that I'm sure most of your guests on this show would probably tell your listeners, is that it absolutely does not require a change in external experience. It's much more significant to learn how to shift our internal experience to create that kind of lasting happiness and peace.
Especially with practical everyday living, I'm always about that, bringing the stuff home, bringing it to how can you operate with these great philosophies when things go wrong, when the world crashes around you, when a downturn in the economy happens, a death of a loved one. All of that. It's how you – resilience. It's all about resilience.
Yeah, no question.
In the long run. Now, in the movie, you have visionaries such as Joe Dispenza was in there and Candace Pert, who we heard from in the trailer. How did you access all of these wonderful people?
You know, it's the great thing about the internet today. People are so accessible in many ways that they never were before, and I literally just – wrote them all emails and said, this is the project I'm working on, would be honored to have you in it because I'm a big fan of your work. And most of them responded. So, you know, I know there are all these problems that a lot of people experience in life with the economy and political times, et cetera. But I would also say to your listeners that I don't think there's ever been a time in history before now that is better for turning your imaginations into reality. I mean, there is so much opportunity available to us. And to be able to communicate a message and literally reach somebody who's in Brazil or China or, you know, the kid in his college dormitory who in 4.5 years goes from eating top ramen for dinner to one of the world's, you know, biggest billionaires, the inventor of Facebook, because of a great idea.
I know. That's
so
true.
It really is an amazing time in history, I think.
I was catching some political commentary on the air the other day, and we were talking about the political candidates. And this particular person said the true change makers these days are the ones that are operating our internet.
Yeah, no question.
And that are responsible, not only operating the internet, but are making social change on the internet happen. And it's so powerful. It is. And our world has been reduced to this box. And it could be used for good, and it can also be used for bad, because it can be an addiction. It could be a way to, there's a lot of different, you know, as if everything could, but it really is a powerful medium.
Oh, yeah. So just look what happened, for example, in Tunisia. I mean, what took us 10 years in Iraq with billions and billions of dollars and the death of our soldiers occurred in Tunisia almost overnight through Facebook and Twitter.
Yes. It's very, very powerful. Arab Spring, all of that,
yeah.
that has come down to the connection that we all have through this amazing tool, which is the internet. So That really puts the power back into the hands of the people, if you think about it, of what we can control with our public opinion and with what we have to say in effect is very, very strong. And so in saying what you're saying with using your imagination, it could sound like a lofty thing to say, but if you really put it in the context of how – if we recognize how powerful we are, especially with using the internet for good, you can really make a big difference with your imagination.
No question. One of the principles that we actually talk about in the film is an idea called a content-to-process shift. And what that means in psychological terms is – starting to pay attention more to the way the patterns of our thinking as opposed to, what we're actually thinking about. And one of the things that I think is really a powerful tool for imagination is when, you know, most people experience conflict or challenge, they have a tendency to think very negatively about it because it's not allowing their life to unfold in the way that they intended. But another way of looking at conflict and challenge is as a calling for imagination. You know, when we're stumped and we're facing an obstacle or a hurdle, we can view that negatively, or we can say, you know, this is the soul's way of seeking my imagination. And if I respond imaginatively, it's amazing the kinds of things that can emerge. I mean, most of the inventions in human history and science have come because of a conflict or a problem that somebody experienced prior to that creative and imaginative thinking.
Absolutely. And that's what Einstein said. Imagination is knowledge.
Yeah.
And you mentioned also the film has got a lot of great grounded science in it that's non-controversial, that really is it's well backed up. Did you do that intentionally?
I did. I made the film originally for PBS, and I also have, you know, spoken typically to audiences like Intel's in the corporate world for many, many years. And there is so much burgeoning science in the fields of neuroscience and psychology and neurobiology that is astounding enough, even though it's established, that I didn't feel the need to put in theoretical concepts that were subject to interpretation. I wanted to ground it in this new science that is really amazing, but also wouldn't allow, you know, people to really reject the principles of the movie because it was controversial. And in fact, recently we just had a review by Scientific American magazine that loved the film and validated all of our science in it. And so
really?
We're really happy about that.
Oh, no, that's terrific. I was going to ask you with it. So, I mean, it really talks a lot, and it teaches through story and through also the teachings of these wonderful visionaries about the healing power of the brain, about, and Joe Dispenza does an amazing job with showing you the neural networks and the connections that in the brain that happen when you actually have a thought or form a new habit or break an old habit.
Yeah.
That's terrific information.
Yeah, it really is. He obviously talks a lot about neuroplasticity, and his book, Evolve Your Brain, and his latest one, I think, is called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Both excellent reads. I really recommend them to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And his visuals as well are very, very strong.
Yep.
With showing that and what neuroplasticity is.
Yeah.
And the actual visuals of it.
And it's also, I mean, helpful for people to understand that when we think in new ways, it feels much like, you know, if I said to you, Lisa, let's go to the gym, we're going to both have a workout, and you look like you're in pretty good shape, so I know this isn't really an issue, but assuming we'd never worked out before, you know, and we went to the gym for a 2-hour workout, it would be a difficult experience, and it would hurt the next day, and it would probably hurt for the next 2 or 3 months until we built that habit in our physical bodies. Well, the exact same thing is true mentally. So people have to learn to start to interpret sometimes the anxiety or discomfort they feel when they're put into a new experience as a growing pain. And when they do and they can learn to love it, then their minds can grow in much the same ways as their bodies.
Yep, absolutely. That's what it's all about. And there's so much information available now to be able to make those changes and communities to get involved with. So it's easier now than it ever has been.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, the movie, again, screens this weekend. It's The People versus the State of Illusion. It's in Westwood starting, what, Friday?
It starts Friday, and it's actually playing every day. So it's just opening like a regular movie. There'll be 3 or 4 showings a day, and they'll keep it there as long as people keep playing or going to the movie. So
that's awesome. A theatrical release.
Yes.
Of this nature. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Good stuff. And also, if you want to call the front desk here, if you're a member of the film club, you can also get passes that way. All right. Well, Austin Vickers, thanks for joining me in studio. I appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Lisa. It was a pleasure being here.
Keep doing the good work.
I will. You too.
Thanks.
All right.
This is Lisa Garr. I'll be right back.